that they have AI judges coming out, artificial intelligent judges. And somehow they're supposed to be better. Yeah, so, you know, the tech tsunami is here. And, you know, by 2025, there's going to be more machines in the workforce than employees.
Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory.
So, the Automate and Grow podcast, and I'm here today with my guest, John DeJulius from the DeJulius Group. John, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
So John is an expert and an author in the area of customer experience, and I would say customer success, but that may not be accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they are, customer experience, customer service, they all fall under the heading.
So now you're quite a prolific author. You have a new book that's coming out. What's that one about?
So all my books are on customer service, customer experience. The last one was the Customer Service Revolution. And the newest one that's coming out fall of 2019 is the Relationship Economy, which, you know, basically it's a digital disruption that is here. It's not going anywhere. The human experience is coming at an expense. And so the best companies are training their employees and making sure their company experience still has a great representation of marrying digital with relationship building.
So I think there's a lot of anxiety out in the world. It's almost to the point of being, doomsday-ish.
Right.
Things that are getting automated and things that are going to go away, like jobs that maybe people are used to now. But, you know, your take on it is that, people are still important, right?
They're hugely important. But there is concern, and there should be. So in Boston, they opened the first fully automated restaurant. A spice restaurant you go in there and you don't see a human being. I mean, they got machines bringing you. You're ordering on iPads. I mean, it's crazy. Then I just saw the workforce. Now, social skills are a premium advantage. And that is where, we're in the midst of the touchscreen age. And that's not a generational thing. We have grandparents on Facebook and, iPads. But as a result, we have less, human interaction, less people skills. We don't look in each other's eyes anymore. And so what's being lost that isn't taught at school and it's not taught at most business is how to truly build an instant rapport with another person, whether that's an associate, a friend, a customer, or total stranger. And that is where the best companies are investing their training in those soft skills, because our existing and future generations will not inherently have it like you and I were forced to have, thank God.
And it's tricky because I think that a lot of the social interactions, maybe the volume is actually higher today. It's just different, right? So bridging the gap between those live in-person relationships for a business versus scalable relationships. Everyone seems to want scalable relationships, right? But how do you bridge those two? Like, what's your thesis on that?
Well, we have to understand that connections don't mean relationships. This is a no-brainer, but it's scientific proof that people with more relationships are happier. But it's also, data proving that we have less real relationships, less inner circles of people we trust, which is why, depression's on the upswing. And I'm not here taking on social media and anything.
That's probably a tool. Yeah,
right. But we have to, in whether it be in our personal lives or building an experience, we have to find the right combination. Allowing artificial intelligence and bots and all those things to handle the repetitive tasks, the mundane tasks, is absolutely great. So it does free us up to, build the important relationship, handle the upset customer, you know, foster those things. You know, same thing with internal with employees. You know, building that. No one quits jobs. They quit. They quit managers. They quit leaders. And that's the thing that we forget.
Another fellow that's been a guest on this podcast is a gentleman by the name of Steve Hoffman, and he's been doing a lot of talks in China because he has Founders Space, which has expanded pretty aggressively in China. And I noticed the other day he was talking in China about your next AI boss.
Yeah.
They're almost saying that, you know, his thesis was interesting, wow, which is, well, this boss is actually better than the randomness of your current boss. And maybe that's who needs to be your next manager.
Well, you know, but to that, so God, that's, I never, that hasn't crossed my mind.
Didn't mine either, but.
Right. But what has crossed my mind that I wrote about is that 40% of bosses today, I hope I'm saying this right, are younger than the workforce.
Interesting.
Right? And so, you know, a lot of 20-something, you know, tech gurus come out, you know, build a business. I don't care if it's Twitter, Facebook, whatever the thing is. And now they are CEO, but you can't microwave people skills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a challenge. So, you know, you could be a 45-year-old who's now working for a 28-year-old. And, you know, that's some scary stuff.
I guess for the 45-year-old, for sure.
Yes. Yeah. But it's also scary for the 28-year-old. I mean, sure, you know, he or she, you know, if they're going to be successful, are going to need to know how to, you know, inspire, motivate, you know, garner that team. And, you know, they're going to need the 45-year-old, you know, generation just as much as they're going to need, you know, the future generations.
So the customers that you deal with today, like, what's your initial conversation? What sort of problems are they bringing to you?
It's a typical pain points, a lack of consistency, a lack of a North Star, if you will. So, you know, with a lot of mergers and acquisitions, you know, you got a melting pot of cultures. And we, you know, the company might have acquired, you know, their number two and three competitors. And everyone had a different flavor of the month, new shiny object. And we got to get, you know, our first place is we got to get people on the same path. So we help companies create a customer service vision statement. So we were talking earlier about Starbucks. One of our biggest, you know, trophies is we help them create their customer service vision statement. And so if you go into any Starbucks in the world, LA, Cleveland, Malaysia, as you know, as everyone knows, they all wear the green apron.
Right.
Well, on the top inside of their green apron, facing them, is their customer service vision and their pillars. You know, that's something that we help create. It's not for the guest to see, it's for the partner to see, you know, 20 times a day when they're taking on and taking up. But that's their North Star. They use that, you know, for everything. So it's that. It's you know, not having, you know, executive sponsorship buy-in by everyone. Because if you don't have executive sponsorship, it is just flavor of the month or management by bestseller, right? And it's going to be the new shiny object. It's creating the systems, the personalization. And the biggest thing is increasing people's service aptitude. Our whole thesis and our foundation is it's not the employee's fault. If you think about every business, almost every single business out there, the frontline customer-facing employee is not the customer.
True.
Right? They're, you know, you go to the Ritz-Carlton, the, you know, 22-year-old valet parking your Lamborghini, you know, is driving a Prius.
Right.
You know, the 23-year-old concierge has never stayed at anything this nice. You know, so they're used to, you know, they haven't flown first class growing up. They haven't stayed at 5-star resorts. They, you know, haven't driven, you know, flashy cars yet. Every business expects them to give that type of an experience the moment they get a job. And it's just not fair. You know, our life experiences didn't afford us the know-how. So the cracking the code is world-class companies at customer service put train for service aptitude. They don't assume people will have it because most won't. I'm assuming you didn't have it. I certainly didn't have it. You wouldn't have wanted my world-class experience when I was 21 or 23. My, you know, you have a college, a daughter. I have a son that just graduated from college and nice kid, great kid. But if you were like, you know, hey, I want you to greet our customers the way you like to be greeted. Oh, it'd be ugly. He'd be like, dude, what's up? You know, and give you the fist pump. That's where he's from. Right. But train him 2 weeks and he could be a rock star.
Well, exactly. That's very true. And I think that's why, like, almost the younger, you know, I think that there's a lot of bad press around younger workers. But the truth is that it's just older people not understanding how to relate to what they understand about the real world. I mean, they get it, right? They're getting the new information. They're not bogged down by the older information that we have. So to your point, though, if you have a culture, like, how do they know it? They're not going to have those same experiences like that an older customer is going to, you know, relate to. So
it's the currency for millennials is purpose. I love millennials. Yeah. My first business, I started 26 years ago as a chain of upscale salons and spas in the Cleveland area. And I got 150 plus millennials and they are the best generation. If you provide a purpose to their job, what they're not willing to do is trade hours for dollars.
Right.
You know, they aren't doing that. And listen, you know, you could say the purpose, you know, the currency for anyone is purpose. I like that the millennials has forced us to up our game.
Right.
Us as leaders.
That's interesting you say that because I think that, you know, the complaint that you hear in, well, even, you know, let's say it's, I think Starbucks probably gets it better, but other organizations is that, well, they want everything tailored to them. And it's kind of like they want that, you know, they've been given a different message growing up than we have, right? It's the positive side of parents that, you know, we're not struggling necessarily. It's that you can do anything you want. And I think that's part of the message that you are unique and special, but you can do anything you want. So it's not that you're lazy or entitled. It's like they're motivated, to your point, by something different. They're not motivated by survival.
Right.
You might actually be higher up on that whole Maslow of hierarchy of needs automatically, right? And I think that's where people miss, and to expect them to translate the culture of an organization without being connected to their purpose is probably really tough.
Right. I love asking my audiences this question. This is what I open up with. I say, if you're going to build a world-class customer service company, be it a software company, a manufacturer, or a hot dog stand at downtown, what is more important in order to do that? A, the hiring of new employees, or B, the training and culture that you put new employees in? And I say before they raise their hand and get to vote, the obvious answer is both, right? Absolutely both. It's like saying, if you're going to be in the best shape of your life, what's more important, your diet or fitness? Both, right? I mean, you're not going to achieve, you know, maximum potential without, you know, both. But back to, but today I'm going to force you to give one extra percent, 51% on one of those. And, you know, typically, you know, about 60% of the audience will say B, the training and culture, which I agree with. Now, the A's will get mad at me, and I'm not saying hiring is not critical and don't start settling and reactive and you know, hiring B minus and C plus players. But where I go with this is, we really think Disney, the Ritz-Carlton, you know, Chick-fil-A's of the world found 50,000 employees born to serve? I mean, I don't think there's 500 human beings born to serve. Yeah. But here's what Disney says that I love. They say, we don't put our new employees in Disney. We put Disney in our new employees. Love that, right? Love that. Because Disney has millennials.
For sure. Ton, yeah. And they have, you know, it's interesting.
They're the same millennials that were working at Taco Bell last year, showing up a minute late. Disengaged,
right? Because they're not, to your point, like, they're not, nothing's been they're not part of a culture probably the same way as Disney. Like, I think, but that's interesting, which is, okay, you say training and culture, but those are kind of also two different, very, you know, very different things. One is like your aptitude to serve or do your job, but then the other is your attitude and, you know, connecting it to your purpose, I think, which is, you know, what are we all about? And how is that a we as opposed to I'm all about this and you're working for me?
Right, right. No, no, you're absolutely right. And but it has to be non-negotiable, right? Which does start in the hiring process that, you know, we're preaching to you and making sure that you're a right fit. You know, if we're just hiring anyone, then obviously the culture goes down and, you know, you do it this way. I believe it's about the customer, depending on what kind of day I'm having, right? But if I had a bad day, got in a fight with my girlfriend last night, well, you know, no one wants to work next to me or be served by me, right? I mean, you know, and that goes back to the Snow White. Snow White can't pick and choose when she's Snow White. I mean, you know, and we got to remember that, you know, people are paying for our experience, you know, and if you're happy, tell your face.
So, you know, once a company has established what that vision is, what's the next step with you? Like, how are you solving that big problem then of training and culture?
So we have a methodology and we didn't invent it, but we kind of codified it working with all these companies. No one bad hires us, right? So, you know, the Ritz-Carlton hires us. It's like, you know, they don't need us, but they are so paranoid that, you know, they could slip. So, you know, they're trying to make price irrelevant and be the brand that their guests can't live without. So you create a service vision. The next thing is create, you know, a world-class internal culture. And that's what I like to call the 30-foot high fence with barbed wire on it. We don't want to be for everyone. We only want to be for, you know, the 2%ers out there, again, that are looking for the, if you're looking for a job, you know, we don't have any jobs. We have careers, but this is going to be the hardest job, most demanding job, because of our expectations and the burden of our reputation. Besides the fact that you better, you know, make the meal, right? Assemble the parts, whatever, flawlessly, you also have to do it in a way that, you know, you're engaging, you know, whoever your customer is. And that might be the person in the cube next to you or on the other end of the phone or whoever that may be. So there's a whole methodology, and then there's the nevers and all, the non-negotiables. We call these nevers and always. There's certain things, you know, when you deal with a world-class company, they'll never do or they'll always do. So I'll give you some examples. Never point, you know, show them. Now, everyone thinks about the restaurant or the hotel in that case, which is true, but every business can point, even the ones that deal with their customers over the phone or email. You can email me saying, John, I need your intro or, you know, your headshot or whatever, and say, oh, you can get that off our website, right? That's pointing versus we should have sent it to you ahead of time. But here's the link. Here's the attachments, right? You know, so same thing. Some other nevers. Never say no. Now, always is not yes. There's a lot of times we can't say yes. The always is just focus on what you can do, right? Never say no. Always focus on what we can do. Just give alternatives. And one more I'll give you, which is my biggest pet peeve, is never say no problem, right? That's the most overused street slang term, can't stand. No problem is a big problem for two reasons. One, it's two negative words. We shouldn't be saying any when we talk to others. But number two is if I'm taking care of you and you ask me for more water, I say no problem. That's implying to you that it's not inconvenient to me. Well, when we're serving others, it's not about my convenience, it's about yours. It's equivalent to saying, you're lucky I only have to go 10 feet for the water. If I didn't go any further, we'd be having a big problem, right? So the always is say, certainly, my pleasure, absolutely, you're welcome. So those are, you know, simple nevers and always, low-hanging fruit that either happen too often or don't happen enough.
So part of like transmuting that culture seems to be setting those standards, but also the language around those standards, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what we say, every word matters.
So then on the flip side is, so, you know, you get the culture down, you indoctrinate your internal team, which makes sense because I think, you know, happy partners or happy employees will, is probably the first step to delivering great service. How do you then make sure that a company is, has policies, processes, procedures that are consistent with that so that there's not a disconnect between what people are saying and doing?
Yeah, so now we got to have, you know, the ongoing training. And just as important is that, you know, each month when we're hiring new employees, got to make sure they're being trained the exact same way, because like any company that's growing, in 6 months to 18 months, you're going to have 30% of a new generation that maybe didn't go through that, you know, last year's training. So you got to make sure everything that you roll out is also put into your orientation, so everyone is coming and up to speed. And then, you know, you got to hold people accountable and measurements. And, you know, people need to be losing sleep at night. So, you know, from, you know, whatever your key performance indicators are, your customer satisfaction, net promoter score, retention rate, re-sign rate. It's different for every company, but these things, so we call a customer, a return on experience dashboard. And whatever those three or four KPIs are, everyone has to be seeing them, right? So, you know, if you had a team doing podcasts, right? It's, you know, whatever that score was, you'd have to make sure. And now if I was one of your podcast facilitators, I'd be working like hell to make sure, you know, that I, you know, didn't come in under a certain score and whatever that, you know, was, you know, and whatever, you know, being engageful, doing your background, you know better than me what, you know, makes a great podcast from a facilitator. But it's all of those things, and, you know, it can't be flavor of the month. It can't go away.
So I guess I tend to think in one area that's really difficult are the tools, though, that we give those people day to day. So how, what are you seeing as far as, like, how do you take systems that are consistent also with that culture? Because I think, especially technology, it's like, if I don't have the information you need or the ability to take action on the thing you need, there's probably going to, it's going to break down, I would think. So I don't know what, I'm curious what you see out there and if you have to address that sort of thing, like what information and technology you're providing those frontline employees to give that great service.
Yeah, I mean, listen, technology is awesome, right? When used right, and it doesn't replace you know, us as you know, the human interaction. But so one thing, you know, the biggest thing about my new book is the relationship economy is, you know, I always say, you know, the greatest skill that any of us are children of all the skills that we can, you know, improve and master, right? I can't play in the NBA, no matter how many hours of basketball I practice. That's not a skill I will ever, you know, or be an Olympian, anything. But I think the ability to build instant rapport, that skill, is so critical. And so using technology, I always, you know, ask people, who thinks they're really good at, you know, building rapport with a total stranger? And I got to count the hands that don't go up. Everyone is pretty sure. And I call BS, right? Because just because you spoke to a person at, you know, Starbucks or at the networking party last night or whatever for 15, 20 minutes, doesn't mean you built a rapport. You could have been spending those 20 minutes talking about, you know, yourself. And, you know, obviously you wouldn't have built a rapport. So what I say is, in order to prove to me that you built a rapport with someone, after any length of conversation, you have to know two or more things of their Ford. F-O-R-D. Family, occupation, recreation, and dreams. If you know two or more things of someone's Ford, you not only built a relationship, you own the relationship. Because to each of us, our own Ford is our hot buttons, right? I, you know, guarantee if we had more time, and because I wanted to ask you about your daughter's softball and where, what college she plays, you know, sometimes, you know, that could be a 30-minute response, right? I mean, because you get excited, you're proud of your daughter, you know? So family, are they married? Do they have kids? How old are their kids? occupation, what do they do, how long they've been doing it. But all of this today is now made easier because we can track that in our CRM system. We can update it. And in some situations, like call centers where someone's calling up to order or schedule an appointment, I don't want call center reps to ask those four questions. That would be like a stalker checklist, right? But you don't have to, because
the degree you're saying of like what's the mandate of the role, right?
Right. But listen, people overshare. You know, they'll say, hey, I have to change my 3 o'clock on Wednesday because my daughter's soccer team made it to districts. Mm-hmm. Bam. Now too often we're so task focused that we just respond with, okay, how about 4 o'clock on Thursday? Versus capturing that, and then when she checks in on Thursday, we say, how's your daughter's, you know, soccer game going? You know, she doesn't remember mentioning that. But, you know, you can hear a dog barking in the background. You could hear a child crying. Or you just look up and see the last time they placed an order. Or that they're, you know, they're calling from Newport. And you can say, hey, has spring, you know, how's spring in Newport, right? That doesn't take any extra time when you have that information in front of you.
That makes sense. So I'm going to ask you about a couple of things. One is, it sounds like you have an event that's coming up in September.
We do. The Customer Service Revolution. It's our 11th year. We held it every year in Cleveland. And last year, 700 people came from all over the world. And we have, you know, like 20 speakers all around customer service, customer service management, you know, leadership and motivation, and just a crazy, ridiculous lineup of really cool, exciting speakers, and people leave, they're all amped up.
That's amazing. So, and those are typically from clients, or who?
Yeah, probably about 60% are clients.
Okay.
And then 40% are just people that are just, you know, chief experience officers all the way up to the, you know, president. No understanding that, you know, the customer experience is the single biggest advantage you could have in today's market.
Makes sense to me. I'm not saying I'm an expert on it. That's why you're on.
I think you're pretty good.
Well, I want to be conscious of your time. I'm going to ask you a couple of things and we can wrap up. One is, how do people get in touch with you, and what's the best way to connect?
You can email me, john@thedejuliusgroup.com. John at the DeJulius Group. DeJulius is DiJulius. And you can find that easily on all the social media stuff. You know, reach out. Let me know what you thought. If I didn't explain it well enough, I'd be happy to explain it more.
So one question I like to ask guests is, how are you, John, changing the world?
So our mission here at the DeJulius Group is changing the world by creating a customer service revolution. But that's an easy answer. So I'm not going to take that.
Bad one.
I have a personal mission statement that is actually up on the wall there that says, live an extraordinary life so countless others do. So, two parts to that. One, I don't want to live an extraordinary life so I have, you know, more cars, more vacations, more homes, right? It's an obligation to, you know, we all have potential, and it's an obligation to see, you know, the fullest amount of our potential, because the way it impacts so many others. So if we think about you know, Martin Luther King, Walt Disney, you know, the greatest people of all time, Oprah Winfrey, if they just woke up when they were young and said, screw it, I'm just going to be average, right? How different our lives would be. And, you know, that's a responsibility I think each of us have, that we have to live it. Now, just saying live an extraordinary life is just lip service. So now I outline what that looks like, right? It's what I'm putting in my mouth. It's body. It's what I'm putting in my brain, listening to motivational podcasts that'll make me a better boss, leader, customer service, husband, you know, father. It's who I'm hanging around and spending my time with. You know, so there's a checklist, and you know, more times than I like when I don't feel like I'm living an extraordinary life, I could go to that checklist and I see what is deficient right now. And I'll certainly get back to watering that section of my garden to make sure I get back on that track.
I love it. That's how you build a legacy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing I'm going to ask is, when we have interesting guests on the Automate and Grow podcast, we like you to nominate another interesting guest to be a future guest. So we typically talk to experts or entrepreneurs, can be, you know, focused on any particular area, but who would you like to nominate, John, as a future guest of the Automate and Grow podcast?
Jesse Cole. He is a owner of the Savannah Bananas. They are a minor league baseball team in Savannah, Georgia.
Cool.
And this guy wears a yellow tuxedo and hat every day of his life. He's one of our speakers in the at the fall conference. His experience that he puts on at his, you know, minor league games, they are sold out for years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And as you know, minor league game, it's not the players on the field. You know, I mean, the vast majority of them never make it to the majors, right? They're not big names. And if they are, they don't stay long there. So they have to put on a show. And he just wrote a book, and I've learned a lot from the experience Jesse and his Savannah Bananas put on. It's incredible.
Okay, I definitely want to talk to Jesse then. I don't know if you know, but I actually, one of my clients, and I work in major junior hockey. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that, yeah.
We're in a similar, and that organization, not to talk about myself, but own three baseball teams. So I'd love to talk to Jesse. So Jesse, it's Jesse Cole, right?
J-E-S-S-E.
Yep.
C-O-L-E.
Perfect. Jesse Cole, you've been nominated to be a guest on the Automate and Grow podcast, and I will take particularly extra interest in having you on. So
he's awesome.
That introduction.
Great guy.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, John, for joining me today. We'll include how to get in touch with John. And this has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast, and we look forward to seeing you on a future episode. And actually, you know what? This might be an interesting milestone, because I think this might be episode 40.
Wow. Good. I'm glad I was part of it. Congratulations.
Thanks. I mean, we want to get to 100, obviously, but
think big. You're going to be at 1,000.
Oh, well, that's possible.
I want to be on your thousands.
Okay. We'll bring you back.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business.